Love is undeniable evidence that Jesus is for real. In fact, maybe the most potent apologetic for Christianity in our culture may be us. Maybe the way we love. You know, in the second century, wild rumors began to circulate about what Christians actually taught and did in their meetings together. And to defend Christianity, a church leader in Carthage named Tertullian wrote a brief explanation of Christian practices and a critique of the unjust accusations that were made against the church. And in his work, he wrote at one point that these attacks against Christianity were made out of jealousy, because Christians displayed character of life that was a character of life that their worldly neighbors really didn't possess. And so he was creating this contrast. In fact, he testified, really, the popular observations about Christians were, see how they love one another. See how they love one another. I mean, that's pretty hard to argue with. That is objective evidence of Christ in their lives. And I wonder, what's our reputation in the community? What do people say about us? Perhaps those who benefited from the youth kickoff, back to school supplies and all that, maybe they could testify. Maybe we could ask your neighbors. If we came to your neighborhood, what would they say about you? Dr. Rosaria Butterfield was both loved and reasoned into the kingdom of Christ, but it was really love that initially broke through the barriers and caused her to explore and think through the hard things. And anyway, she writes, the word Jesus stuck in my throat like an elephant tusk. No matter how hard I choked, I couldn't hack it out. Those who professed the name commanded my pity and wrath. As a university professor, I tired of students who seemed to believe that knowing Jesus meant little else, always seizing opportunities to insert a Bible verse into a conversation with the same point as a punctuation mark, to end it rather than to deepen it. Stupid, pointless, menacing. That's what I thought of Christians and their God, Jesus. But thankfully, she became friends with Ken and his wife, Floy. An unexpected relationship occurred. And she explained, they entered my world. They met my friends. We did book exchanges. We talked openly about sexuality, politics. They didn't act as if such conversations were polluting them. When we ate together, Ken prayed in a way I never heard before. His prayers were intimate, vulnerable. He repented of his sin in front of me. He thanked God for all things. Ken's God was holy and firm, yet full of mercy. She had argued for years about Christ, but she could not argue with the genuine nature of Ken and Floyd's uncompromising love for her. And so she began to read God's word more carefully, and eventually she gave her life to Christ. Love is undeniable evidence that Jesus is for real. Listen to Paul's assertion in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 25. Good deeds are obvious, and even those that are not cannot be hidden. Eventually, it becomes plain to everyone. See, this month, we've been emphasizing love sensi. Love our neighbors. And the first assignment was to open your home or to do something with someone who's very different from you. Cross those human, social, cultural barriers with cookouts and picnics and coffee and fellowship. But engage someone. I hope you did that. Did you do it? Have you done it? If not, you still can. Then the next week, we urge you to love children and families. And we ask you to do something, a very practical thing, to volunteer to help out with our youth kickoff and school supply giveaway. And a number of you did. And then last Sunday, I challenged you to have a conversation with someone yet to believe and try to sprinkle faith into that conversation. because we've got to talk about Jesus more. And so did you do that? Did you talk to anybody? Did you bring up Jesus in a conversation with someone yet to believe? I hope you did. You can still do it. And I hope you do every week. Today, I want to urge you to show love in a practical way in your neighborhood, in your workplace, and even here in the church family. But I want you to get out there mostly and show an act of love to someone. Hebrews 10, 24 and 25 urges. And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day approaching. And really, that's what I want to do in the next few minutes today as we're gathered here together as an assembly. I want to spur you on to love and good deeds. All right? There's a narrative account in Acts chapter 9, if you want to open your Bibles there, that shows us the way of love, and it primarily is illustrated through a woman named Tabitha. So in Acts chapter 9, starting with verse 36, Luke writes to us, "In Joppa, there was a disciple named Tabitha," which when translated is Dorcas, "who was always doing good and helping the poor. About that time, she became sick and died, and her body was washed and placed in an upstairs room. Lydda was near Joppa, and so when the disciples heard that Peter, the apostle Peter, was in Lydda, they sent two men to him and urged him, 'Please, come at once!' Well, Peter went with them, and when he arrived, he was taken upstairs to the room, and all the widows stood around him crying and showing him the robes and other clothing that Dorcas had made while she was still with them. Peter sent them all out of the room. And then he got down on his knees and he prayed. And turning toward the dead woman, he said, 'Tabitha, get up.' She opened her eyes, and seeing Peter, she sat up, and he took her by the hand and helped her to her feet. And then he called the believers and the widows and presented her to them alive. And this became known all over Joppa. And many people believed in the Lord." I bet they did. What an amazing thing. What an amazing time. I think this woman, Tabitha, teaches us a lot. And one thing is a lifestyle of meeting needs is undeniable. A lifestyle of meeting needs is undeniable. The scene is so heart-moving. A beloved Christian woman has died, and the people just can't bear the loss. They can't stand her absence. Tabitha had loved them so much in such personal and practical ways. And all they could do now that she was gone was hold up the evidence of her love. You know, they had these countless garments that she had handmade for fellow church members and neighbors, people in need. Many of them were widows, obviously. And so it's a large sampling of the kind of person she was and the love that she had shown in serving people. You know what? I've officiated hundreds of funerals through the years. And I've heard all kinds of eulogies about the one who has died. He was so kind. She was so loving. You know what? But in Tabitha's case, they brought the physical evidence. They piled it up. It wasn't just sentiments. It was real stuff. 1 John 3:8 urges, "Let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and truth." So meeting needs in a practical, personal way like Tabitha is undeniable love. You can't argue with that. You can't ignore it. You can't sweep it away like it didn't happen. Tabitha's kindness were personal investments of her time and abilities poured out person to person. This was not an impersonal donation that she made. Now, I'm not minimizing charitable donations. Please don't misunderstand. That's important. But Christ-like love calls us to do more than simply writing a check. More than writing a check. This was hands-on, face-to-face, heart-to-heart giving. This was not, "Well, I'll be praying for you." No, this is doing for you. Making a real difference. Tabitha did helpful, useful, practical things for people. She met the needs of people. And they knew they were loved. My neighbor had 8-hour back surgery a few weeks ago. 8-hour back surgery. Can you imagine that? Well, this couple was shocked when I showed up at the hospital before the surgery at 6 a.m. They were stunned to see me. And they just blurted out, they just blurted out that no one from their church would ever do that. And her mother said, anyone who would do that for me, I'd go to that church. Now, I'm not patting myself on the back. Please don't think that. I'm not doing that. I'm trying to illustrate that when any of us gives personal care, when we meet someone's needs in love, it is the undeniable evidence that Jesus is for real and that they're loved. You know, I did it because of Jesus. Last week, this couple, the dad was at work. And so mom, after the surgery, she's still recovering. It's been a good 3 weeks now, but she's still recovering. It's going to take a long time. And they have 4 very active boys, 5th grade to kindergarten. I mean, so imagine that household trying to manage all that. And there they were. And so I just went out in the yard to occupy them and play ball with them and such. As much as I can, I try to just interact with them. And it's just something practical that I can do to help, so mom doesn't have to worry about it. And so dad was gone that day, and I was tossing a ball to him, and they were hitting it, and we were having such a good time. In fact, it's ironic that I have this in my sermon, because yesterday I wanted a quiet, peaceful place to kind of review my sermon. So I took my laptop out on the patio and the ponds there and the waterfalls trickling. And it was a pleasant day. The weather was just right. And so I was in this and kind of reviewing things. And suddenly they saw me out there. It is like flies swarming around me, these boys. They come around and they all talk at the same time. They all tell me their story and they're all just going along, and I stop what I'm doing. I just engage them and talk back with them, and we just have a really good time playing a few games, and I tease them and all kinds of stuff, and they're loaded with questions, let me tell you. But it's a great time. Brenda posted a picture of us out there, I think, on Facebook when I was talking to them. But the parents said, man, you guys mean so much. Now, they've had some help from relatives to take care of the boys. But I got to thinking, there's really more that I could have done. There's more I could have done. I'm ashamed to say that I guess I was too busy to even prepare a meal for them. One meal even. I didn't do that. And I feel bad, but I should have done more. People around us need help. And when we will make the effort to do something that helps, they notice. Aristides. Not Aristides Aquino, the Reds' new home run star, but a Christian in the first century Athens described Christians to the Roman Emperor Hadrian this way. They love one another. They never fail to help widows. They save orphans from those who would hurt them. If they have something, they give freely to the man who has nothing. If they see a stranger, they take him home and are happy as though he were a real brother. Love is undeniable evidence that Jesus is for real. When the devastating plagues of the early centuries swept over Europe, those who were able fled the cities. But not the Christians. They stayed. Many of them ministered to the sick and dying, and whether they were Christians or not, they helped them. Dionysius, Bishop of Alexandria, described how believers responded to the plague. He said, most of our brethren were unsparing in their exceeding love and brotherly kindness. They held fast to each other and visited the sick fearlessly and ministered to them continually, serving them in Christ, and they died with them most joyfully, taking the affliction of others and drawing the sickness from their neighbors to themselves and willingly receiving their pains. And many who cared for the sick and gave strength to the others died themselves, having transferred to themselves their death. But with the heathen, Everything was quite otherwise. They deserted those who began to be sick and fled from their dearest friends, and they cast them out into the streets when they were half dead, and they left the dead like refuse unburied. Now, that's a pretty profound contrast in a terrible, terrible setting. The people of Joppa were profoundly impacted by the loving deeds of Tabitha or Dorcas. That man, they were feeling the loss. What would they do now without her? You know, she had played such a big role in their lives. She did so much for people. They desperately wanted her back. And I felt that way before, have you? And I felt that. I am truly so excited for John and Wendy Spaulding's new ministry opportunity with Team Expansion in Louisville, where they're sending and enabling missionaries to go throughout the world and plant churches and spread the gospel. I'm so excited for them. At the same time, man, they did so much in the life and ministry of this church family. How can we ever replace them? I miss them terribly, don't you? And I remember when the Frisneys served on the mission field in Kosovo for a little over a year, and it was wonderful to partner with them. It really was. That was a great thing. But I have to tell you, in their absence, we felt it around here profoundly. Glenn and Jessica Shady, and they were touching so many lives here, and their move to Paris left a gaping hole that we can't fill. But we're thrilled of the mission work they're doing in France. And, you know, we're all behind that, and we love that, and we're partnering with that, but we miss them here. See, our practical help in our communities, in our schools, in our workplaces should be so significant that we make ourselves irreplaceable. If people can't stand that we're not there when we're not. I'm wondering, if you didn't live in your neighborhood any longer, would you be missed? Really? If Western Hills Church of Christ disappeared from Covedale, if we shut things down, closed up shop, and weren't here anymore, would people struggle? Would there be grief in this community? Would anyone even notice? Well, yeah, they would notice. At least initially, the people would notice that we're not here all of a sudden. People would notice that, and that's a good thing. But I wonder how long that would last. Tabitha's love was not random acts of kindness, occasional good deeds, volunteering when the church had an outreach ministry project. No, her love was a purposeful lifestyle. Living a servant lifestyle is the kind of love that Jesus taught us. See, we're on call 24/7. We're characterized by meeting people's needs. We lay down our lives, our agendas, our priorities for the good of others, like Jesus laid down his life for us. So Tabitha was obviously a seamstress, so what did she do? She made clothes for people who needed them. You know what? A carpenter might help homeowners make repairs, and an experienced mom might take young mothers under your wing and share some wisdom. If you can crunch numbers, maybe you help people with their taxes. If you're a good cook, maybe you mentor some new wives in the kitchen, or you provide meals for people who are unable to cook for themselves. If you're educated, maybe you can tutor some others to read or write or do math, whatever it is, whatever they need help with. Love silences the critics. Love intrigues doubters and captures the attention of the indifferent, but it silences critics. Roy Hattersley, an outspoken atheist, observed, "It is an unavoidable conclusion that Christians are the people most likely to take the risks and make the sacrifices involved in helping others." Hattersley noted that this pattern of behavior goes beyond disaster relief, like responding when there's a Katrina or something. But civilized people do not believe that drug addiction and male prostitution offend against divine ordinance. But those who do believe that are men and women most willing to change the fetid bandages and replace the sodden sleeping bags. The only possible conclusion, says Hattersley, is that faith comes with a packet of moral imperatives that, while they do not condition the attitude of all believers, influence enough of them to make Christians morally superior to atheists like me. And the world just wonders why we would do what we do as Christian servants. They wonder. But our response is, how can we do less? How can we do less after what Jesus has done for us? We're compelled recipients of His grace. Again, 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 25. Good deeds are obvious. And even those that are not cannot be hidden. Isn't that what Jesus said? He said the same thing when He's talking about us being light. He said, a city on a hill cannot be hidden. And I mean, there's no denying it. There's another way love makes Jesus real, and that is a ministry bringing Jesus into people's lives is substantial. It can be transformative. The truth is, lots of people do kind, selfless things to help one another in times of need. We see that in our world all the time. What I'm saying is we can do Tabitha-like deeds by joining the Peace Corps, or volunteering for Goodwill, or any other number of service organizations and projects in our neighborhoods. But something sets Christian love and kind deeds apart. Because we not only minister to the physical and emotional needs of people, but we minister to spiritual needs as well, right along with it. Our acts of love bring Jesus into people's circumstances. You know, Peter, if you look back a couple verses, Peter healed a paralytic in verse 34, and he did it in the name of Christ. And then the church at Joppa heard about him and what he was doing there, and they sent for him because they believed that he could bring the power of Jesus into their loss of Tabitha. Now, I don't really know what they expected. Did they think Jesus was going to perform a resurrection or something? Did that enter their mind? We're not told. I really don't know. But they did expect something miraculous, something powerful, something that only Jesus could do. They were desperate. And their faith was rewarded as Jesus showed up in a dramatic way and gave Tabitha back to them, as Peter gladly ministered to their need. Friends, when we come alongside the poor and help them in very practical, personal ways, they experience the love of Jesus Himself in a personal way. When we see a friend through a tragedy, or we provide support and accountability for a friend who's trying to escape addiction, or when we mentor an at-risk child, or we adopt an orphan, or we prevent a suicide, or we help a family clean up after fire or storm damage, when we love like that, we're imparting Christ. We bring Him into the equation. See, when we're there for people long after everyone else has moved on with their busy lives, but when we're still in the trench with someone, Jesus becomes very real. Because love is undeniable evidence that Jesus is for real. My friend Mike Bro was a minister of a very big church, super church, out in Las Vegas at one time, and they were doing amazing things. They were leading showgirls, prostitutes, gamblers, addicts, and many more people to Christ. It was very great. So Mike, I remember hearing Mike tell often he would go to a local bar just to have lunch. And he didn't drink there, but he just went to befriend people and to have a sandwich and build relationships. And he just listened to stories and talked with them, and he just became one of the usuals. His church had done some amazing need-meeting ministry in the community, some big event thing that they did, and it was such a big event that they were in the news. It was a big deal. And the TV was on in the bar that day while Mike's having his lunch, and suddenly there was Mike on the news being interviewed with the byline across the bottom of the screen, Pastor Mike Bro. And the bar patrons gasped, hey, that's you! That's you! We never knew you were a preacher. We thought you were just one of us. You know, and they were just totally stunned. So how come you, being a preacher, never preached at us? Why would you even stoop to eat lunch with the likes of us? Because, you see, what happened is, in the person of Mike, Jesus came to that bar for lunch. His genuine, non-condemning but non-condoning love enabled Mike to lead some of these people in that bar to the Lord. That's why he went. Fred Craddock relates, "My mother took us to church and Sunday school every week. My father didn't go. He complained about Sunday dinner being late when she came home. And every time the preacher would come to visit, my father would say, 'I know what the church wants. Church doesn't care about me. Church wants another name, another pledge.'" Right? Isn't that the name of the game? Another name, another pledge. And that's what he always said. "I guess I heard it 1,000 times, Craddock said. But one time he didn't say it. He was in Veterans Hospital, and he was down to 73 pounds. They had taken out his throat. And they put in a metal tube. He says x-rays burned him to pieces. He said, I flew in to see him. He couldn't speak, couldn't eat. I looked around the room. Potted plants and cut flowers on all the windowsills. A stack of cards 20 inches deep beside the bed. And even on the tray where they put the food was another flower. And all the flowers beside the bed and every card and every blossom were from persons or groups from the church." And he saw me read a card. And he could not speak, so he took a Kleenex box and he wrote on the side of it a line from Shakespeare. And if he had not written this line, I would not tell this story. He wrote, "In this harsh world, draw your breath in pain to tell my story." I said, "What's your story, Dad?" He wrote, "I was wrong. I was wrong." See, love is undeniable evidence that Jesus is for real. Some of you are Christians today because Jesus showed up in your life when you really needed him, in the form of a Christ follower who just came alongside to meet your need, walk through your valley with you. Now, the last bit of evidence of love that we see in Tabitha's story is a community of care is irresistible. It's irresistible. I think Tabitha is just one of the highlights of the church at Joppa. She wasn't probably the only one, but I think she led the way in what a community of care can do for one another and for the people in their city. It's the kind of church family that everyone wants to be a part of, where needs are being met. It reminds me of the church in Jerusalem in the very beginning. Acts chapter 2, verses 44 through 47 explains, "All the believers were together, and they had everything in common, selling their possessions and goods they gave to everyone as he had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts, and they broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and," look at the result, "enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those being saved." Chapter 4, verse 34 adds, "There was no needy person among them." That's remarkable. No, that's compelling. Who wouldn't want to be a part of a fellowship like that? That was a rare thing. So people were hungry for that. And Jesus said, "By this all men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another." Our community of care for one another is what makes us attractive. Galatians chapter 6, verse 10 challenges, "As we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, but especially to those who belong to the family of believers." It's got to start here. Membership has its privileges. And so as we help one another, that draws people. I want to be a part of that. I want to be loved like that. I want a place where I can love like that. One of the reasons that we're emphasizing that every person in this church needs to be in a life group is so that we can love and care for each other in the context of those small, meaningful relationships. Our elders and ministers can't possibly give personal, practical care to a couple hundred people by themselves. That's impossible. That's ridiculous. But life groups form natural shepherding relationships where we can disciple and meet the needs of one another. So I know right now that my life group would be there for me if I needed something special going on. If something was going on, they would be there for me. I know they would. I know them. I trust them. They're the best. And we are growing in our love and our care for one another. And we all need that. We need that context. It helps us in so many different ways. So when your friends see that you have a life group, that'll make them hungry. Because you know what? Most people in this world don't have some kind of small group that really cares for them like that. They have friends. They have teammates, co-workers. They have groups to party with or go camping or fishing with, things like that. But you know what? Often their fellowship is really just shallow. It's superficial relationships, and people wear masks and friends like you, as long as they're getting something out of the relationship. And these friends don't necessarily invest in each other spiritually, and they might not be there for you if you really blow it. And they're not enriching life spiritually with each other. They're not sacrificing for one another. But I'll tell you what, a community where genuine love is being practiced and is built on the person of Jesus Christ, that's very appealing. It's very appealing. You know, if you're not in a life group, go to our church website. Do it today. Western Hills, the WHCT.com. You click on the icon when you get there that says groups. There's a little picture kind of right in the middle. And groups and classes, you click on that. And then it will open the window for you to see the different options of Bible classes and Bible studies and life groups and so on. And pick something and get plugged in. And we'd like to launch more groups this fall. And so I hope that you'll get involved with that. I'm ready to start another life group myself, an additional one, so that if you're interested, talk to me. Now, if you're already in a life group like that, it's important that you're committed to love one another and disciple one another. And one of the best things you can do is to introduce one of your friends, a coworker or somebody, a neighbor, to your life group. Bring them. Because there's a lot of people who are kind of down on the church or skeptical or afraid of coming to church, but they might come to a small group setting like that where they can experience and grow together with you, and they'll see the love dynamic going on. There's great power in loving fellowship from these groups. Love is undeniable evidence that Jesus is for real, and he can bring diverse people together in fellowship. So our simple assignment is this week, in our Love Sensei assignment. Wash someone's feet. I don't mean literally get their shoes off and scrub them up. I don't mean that unless they need that. But I'm just saying go out of your way to do something especially kind, to do something personal and practical, something that's needed, something that is perhaps even unexpected for a neighbor or a coworker or a friend who's yet to believe. And then see what Jesus will do with that. See what doors that may open in time. Love, Sensei. The bread and the cup remind us Sunday after Sunday how loved we are. The great sacrifice Jesus made for you. And you didn't deserve it, and I didn't either. He knows all your darkest secrets. He still laid down his life for you so that you can have new life. So you can be a part of the fellowship forever. Isn't that glorious? We can't forget that. We can't forget that because that love is what compels us to love. We love because he first loved us. So if you'd like to celebrate His love for us today in that way. We have tables set up in the four corners of the room where you can serve yourself in the Lord's Supper and then return to your seat. Whenever you're ready, you can do that. Maybe today you want to go to the table with a group of friends that you dearly love here. See, let's partake together. It's okay, you're allowed to talk. And it's, let's partake together. Serve each other if you want. And do this together and remember the love that you have because of Jesus. Or maybe it's not with a close friend. Maybe you want to connect up with somebody that you don't know very well. Or maybe somebody you've had trouble with or something. Go find someone. Maybe it's someone you haven't met before and say, let's go to the table together. If you want to do that, you're welcome to do that. Maybe today you want to say, I believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, my Lord and Savior. I want to be baptized. I want Him to cleanse my sin. I want a new start. I want to be a part of the church family. So if you want to do that today, I invite you to come during the same time and meet me down here in the front. We'll help you with that step as well.